to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Everything seems easy on the front end of things. You want to start a new exercise program and you're all pumped up for the first couple of weeks. And before you know it, you're finding every excuse under the sun not to work out. You want to lose weight, so you start a new diet, and you're all excited after shedding that first 5 or 10 pounds. Then you have a couple cheat days, and you give up. You're frustrated at your lack of motivation, your lack of willpower, and your continual failures. It really shouldn't be this way. If you struggled with any of the above, you've come to the right place. This time, it's going to be different. Why? Because my guest today is Deborah Beck Busis. And she's going to share about the Beck Diet Solution. Deborah is an LCSW and the Diet Program Coordinator at the Beck Institute in Philadelphia. She's the daughter of Dr. Judith Beck, who authored the book, and the granddaughter of Dr. Aaron Beck, who's the founder of cognitive behavioral therapy and arguably the most influential psychotherapist in history. Debbie, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Beck Diet Solution isn't a diet program, is it? It's a psychological program.
That's exactly right. It doesn't necessarily tell you what to eat. It tells you, teaches you the skills you need to stick to any healthy diet that you choose.
Okay, why is that important?
Well, research has shown, and I'm sure many people listening have found too, that it's almost anybody can lose 5 pounds or 10 pounds or even more, but almost nobody can keep it off. So what we really found is that dieters really need to learn specific skills, things to help them cope when they want to eat for emotional reasons. They want to eat because they're feeling stressed or they're going to a party and are having trouble staying in control. It's really the difference between knowing what to do and knowing how to get yourself to do it.
Mm-hmm. Your mom writes in the book that the reasons people fail at dieting is that they don't know how to diet. What does that mean?
We conceptualize successful dieting like this. It's kind of like learning to play the piano. It's a series of skills that you learn and you build up. Nobody would expect to sit down at a piano for the very first time and play a symphony flawlessly. They would think, I need to learn how to read music, maybe get a teacher, start out with scales. I'll hit wrong notes along the way. Of course, I'll start out with easier pieces and work up to harder ones. But people really seem to think that they should be able to pick up a diet book and follow it flawlessly from now until forever. But it doesn't work that way. People need to learn a series of skills. And the more they practice them, the easier they get.
Mm-hmm. Can you briefly describe the foundational principles of cognitive therapy for those who might not know how it works? Because the book is really based around that.
Sure. So all applications of cognitive therapy are based on the cognitive model. And what the cognitive model states is what you think influences how you act and how you feel. So if there is someone whose boss yells at him and then he goes and eats pretzels because he's so upset, it's not the fact that his boss yelled at him that caused him to eat pretzels directly. It was his thinking about the fact that his boss yelled at him. So he probably thought something like, this is so unfair, I'm so stupid, I can't handle this. The only thing I can do right now to help me feel better is eat. So because he has those thoughts, of course he's then going to eat. But if it's the same situation and there's a man and his boss yells at him and this time he thinks, well, my boss yells at everyone, it's not a big deal, everyone knows that it doesn't mean anything, just get on with your day, you're fine, then he's probably not going to eat. So it's never the situation in and of itself. It's always someone's thoughts about the situation.
Right. So we attach meaning to those thoughts.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. And so that really translates into our belief system, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So we're believing things about ourselves, you know, other people or the world around us that tend to sabotage us.
Right, exactly. So it's really the meaning that we make of situations.
Mm-hmm. So these sabotaging thoughts are the key to getting us off track. Can you give us some concrete examples of how that would look for the person who's struggling with losing weight, say, for years?
Sure. So here are just some examples. So if, let's say, someone is at a party at work and there's lots of food around and someone has made homemade cupcakes, let's say. And so there's someone who's trying to lose weight. She has a homemade cupcake in front of her. There are dozens of thoughts she could have in that moment, which would then cause her to eat the cupcake.
Wanting to eat the cupcakes, Debbie,
right.
Because I love cupcakes, you know?
Right. So probably most of those thoughts start out with the phrase, it's okay to eat this because somebody made it. It's a celebration. Everyone else is eating it. I really want to. It's okay because it looks really good. I'll make up for it later. It's free. I'll exercise later. somebody will be disappointed if I don't. So if a person has any one of those thoughts, she's probably then going to eat the cupcake. But if, by contrast, it's the same situation, and this time someone has the thought, you know what, this cupcake looks really good, but my weight loss goals are so much more important to me. I'm not going to eat this now, and I know I'm going to feel good about it later. Then she's probably not going to eat the cupcake. So what we help clients do, dieters do, is really figure out what thoughts they have in what situations, and then help them come up with responses to them.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing that I try to do with folks is have them hold out for like a 15 or 20 minute window. You know, it's kind of like that exposure and response prevention.
Right.
Like if you can just hold it out, because I tried this on myself eating Oreos. You know, I love like mint double stuff Oreos. And like I can eat a couple of Oreos after dinner or something. And then like I find if I distract myself, this just kind of happened, you know, willy-nilly. And after about 15 or 20 minutes, I came back and they were sitting there and I didn't even want them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, we really need to be intentional about this. We can still decide to eat the cupcake maybe, you know, or the Oreo, but can we give ourselves that shot? Can we really focus on that kind of thinking like you're saying? What's more important to me? You know, the immediate gratification or my long-term goals of, you know, being in shape and losing weight.
Right. And I should have clarified. So we're not trying to tell people don't ever eat cupcakes or don't ever eat Oreos. What we are saying is really if you have a treat like that, it's a better idea to decide in advance when you're going to have it. And then plan ahead so that when you do end up having it, let's say you plan to have 3 Oreos at night. If that's your plan, then you can sit down, you can eat those Oreos and really enjoy them and mm-hmm. not feel guilty about them. Versus if it's someone who is, you know, unexpectedly sees a cupcake, if she thinks to herself, I know I shouldn't be eating this, but I really want to, and then she ends up giving in, she's probably going to feel guilty about it and won't enjoy the cupcake as much anyway.
Right.
So we find that really planning in advance when to have treats is really helpful.
Yeah, so how do we do that around the holidays? This is a great time to be talking about this because, you know, there's so many parties, there's, you know, you're baking, you're cooking, you're eating the dough, you're grabbing a couple extra cookies, and before you know it, you've put on 5 pounds.
Right, or more.
Yes.
Yes. It is really a lot harder during the holidays. I mean, we would never say otherwise, but it's certainly not impossible. So there's a couple good kind of tricks and techniques that people can use. One of the first things, the very first things that we teach to our clients here is to really work on eating everything sitting down. It is incredibly easy to eat 100, 200, 300, or even 400 or more extra calories a day standing up. And it's really just kind of the cookie you pop in your mouth in passing, mm-hmm. you know, a couple spoonfuls of cookie dough. You run into the kitchen and grab something quickly and walk out. And we find that when people eat standing up, they just don't get the same level of satisfaction from the food. And that if you ask someone, could you list everything you ate in a day, she'll usually forget everything that she ate standing up. So when we have clients really focus on eating everything sitting down, it helps cut out a lot of this kind of extraneous eating, and they don't even miss it.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So sit down and take your time.
Sit down, everything, right. And what it really does is, I mean, there's so many situations in the day when we just kind of pop food automatically in our mouths, you know, while we're cooking, while we're putting away food, while we're making our kids' lunches, you know, samples at supermarkets, when we're just running into the kitchen for something. So if we really work on deliberately eating sitting down, then it helps us be more aware of that food and often cut a lot of it out.
Do you guys suggest that clients write down what they eat, like do some food journaling on the front end when you first begin to see them?
When we first begin to see clients, we don't have them write down what they eat. Really, the first thing that we teach them is kind of how and when to eat. So we teach them to eat everything sitting down. We teach them to eat everything slowly and mindfully. We teach them to make a list of all the reasons why they want to lose weight and read that list every day. We teach them how to deal with cravings and emotional eating without turning to food. So they learn all of these skills before they ever start trying to write down what they eat or follow a diet. So they gain a lot of confidence in themselves. So by the time we're asking them to do harder things, like follow a diet, they already have a really strong foundation.
Yeah, that's great. How about, you know, coming up with counter statements to challenge some of those thoughts? Do they do that on the front end then?
Yeah, so we'll start that right from the get-go. There's probably two really common holiday sabotaging thoughts. I mean, there's more, but I'm thinking of two right now. One would be, it's okay to eat this because it's the holidays. You know, I'm celebrating. To which we always reply, your body has no idea that it's the holidays. Your body doesn't care that it's the holidays. It treats all calories the same 365 days a year. So if you eat extra during the holidays, you will gain weight.
Yes. Fact.
And then another one that we hear a lot from clients is, it's okay to eat this because everyone else is. You know, I'm at a party, everyone else is having four cookies, so it's okay to have four cookies too. And we remind clients that your body doesn't know or care what anyone else around you is eating. It only knows what you eat. So just because people are eating four cookies doesn't necessarily mean that you can. It might mean it if you planned it in advance, but it's not true that just because other people are, it means you can too.
Mm-hmm. How about the thinking, if I blow my diet, I might as well quit? You know, I get that a lot from some of my eating disordered clients. How do you pick back up from that, you know, when you've eaten, say, half a bag of cookies?
Right. So one of the things that we remind our clients is that really there's no such thing as blowing it for the day, because every bite of food you continue to eat, your body will continue to process, and the more calories you'll take in and the more weight you'll gain. So there's no such thing as blowing it for the day, because anything you continue to eat will continue to add up. The second thing that we remind them is that in really almost no other area of life do we think that it makes sense to compound one mistake with another. If you were driving in your car and you went through a red light and you got pulled over and got a ticket, you wouldn't think to yourself, well, I've blown it for the day, I might as well keep running red lights and start driving carefully.
That's a great analogy.
Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or here's my other favorite one. If you were walking down a flight of stairs and stumbled down a few, would you say, well, I've blown it, and throw yourself down the rest?
Mm-hmm.
No, you would get up right from that step and walk down the rest. So we really remind clients that just because you made one mistake, it's not a legitimate excuse to keep making more. You wouldn't in any other way.
Right. You know, and I have people consciously slow it down and think about, okay, I still have a choice. Maybe I've eaten too many of the cookies, but I can choose right now to do something different than I would normally do and eat the whole bag.
Right.
So it's all about choices, isn't it?
Yes. And I like the idea of choice, because it really shows that, you know, we have control over this. It's not out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
We always tell clients that you're entitled to make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, we're human. We don't teach clients to never make mistakes. What we do teach them to do is recover right away from mistakes. So a mistake turns out to be, you know, a cookie or two extra cookies instead of an entire bag. So two extra cookies in a week is not going to make a difference. An entire bag very well could.
Yes.
So they're entitled to make mistakes. They're just not entitled to say, since I've made one mistake, it's okay to keep making more.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the sabotaging thoughts that people have begin with a trigger. Can you give us some examples of how that works?
Sure. So triggers, there's generally four kind of categories of triggers. Triggers could be social. Someone is, you know, out and seeing everyone else at happy hour drinking margaritas or seeing all the chips someone is eating. Triggers could be environmental. They're just seeing food. They walk past the pizza shop and smell it. They walk into a bakery and see the bread. Triggers can be emotional. Someone is feeling really sad or stressed and wants to eat. Someone is feeling really upset or anxious. Triggers can also be happy emotions. And triggers can be biological. You know, someone is feeling actual hunger. Someone is feeling thirsty. So there's all these categories of triggers. The good news is that no matter what the trigger is, no matter what category it's from, the way that we help clients deal with it is the same, which is figure out what's going on, figure out what thoughts they're having that says, it's okay to eat this because, and then come up with responses to it so they don't give in.
And all of that would be tailored to the particular person. You've got to come up with counterstatements that are going to work for you, which may not work for Susie Q.
Correct. But there are, you know, ones that in general tend to work for a lot of people, like something, you know, an emotional trigger. Someone says, you know, I'm really upset. It's okay to eat right now because I'm really upset and I want to calm down. So that could be a really general thought that a lot of people have. And a good general response might be, yes, if I'm upset, I'm entitled to calm down, but I'm also entitled to get all the benefits of losing weight, so I can't eat to help myself calm down.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some responses that can be very general, which work for a lot of people.
Right. Especially people that look to food for comfort. That can be something that started way back, you know, from the time they were little. How can this program help people that tend to go to food for comfort and kind of, you know, dismantle those negative beliefs?
You know, a lot of the clients we work with, this really has, it's been a coping mechanism that they've used for a really long time. You know, I was working with one client who every time she got upset, her older brother was really mean to her. Every time he kind of bullied her, her grandmother would give her a piece of white bread with sugar sprinkled on it.
Oh.
And that was really kind of the equivalent of comfort to her.
Mm-hmm.
But what we found is that every time she ate in response to a negative emotion, she ended up feeling worse because then she felt really guilty and badly. And she said to herself, I can't believe I did this again. So what we really helped her see is that when she eats in response to negative emotions, the only thing it does is it turns one problem into two. Because eating doesn't solve the problem that made her upset in the first place. And now it also adds on the problem of feeling badly and guilty. So she was really able to see, do I want to turn one problem into two or do I want to just have one problem?
Right. It's an illusion. I mean, we think it's going to make us feel better in the moment, and maybe it does for 5 minutes, but then, boom, we've got this whole other thing. We're feeling bad, we're beating ourselves up, we're miserable.
Yeah, and you know, we understand why people eat for emotional reasons. It actually can be extraordinarily effective, but only in the short term, as you're saying, and it comes with really negative consequences. So we help clients come up with other things that they can do in that moment, which initially may not be quite as effective as eating, but they come, you know, if they take a walk or if they take a hot bath or they phone a friend, you know, these things come with no negative consequences.
Absolutely. It's that support system. And again, they're holding out that window. Can I wait 15 minutes and then maybe the urge to eat something will pass?
So, you know, one of the best defenses that we find against cravings, if someone just really wants to eat something, is to get distracted. You know, cravings are a lot like itches, and the more we pay attention to them, the worse they get. But the moment we really lose focus of an itch, the moment that we get really distracted, the moment the itch goes away. And cravings are very similar. The moment we get really distracted and stop thinking about that cake that's in our fridge, mm-hmm. is the moment we stop wanting it.
Okay, so we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, folks who've lost tons of weight only to gain it back in a few months or a year. Why is that? What are these people missing?
So in general, and this is not across the board, but we do find that the faster someone loses weight tends to be the faster that they gain it back. So people who lose weight really quickly, and, you know, these could be really classic yo-yo dieters, people who, you know, lose 30 pounds fairly quickly and then gain 40 pounds back just as fast. Generally, these people are doing things in order to lose weight that they can't maintain. So they're cutting their calories to an unreasonably low level, or they're cutting out entire categories of food that they really like all sweets or all bread or all pasta. So what happens is people are certainly able to lose weight doing these things, but these things are not maintainable for the long term. So the moment someone stops doing them, the moment someone starts eating sweets again, or the moment someone goes from, you know, 1,200 calories back up to 1,800 calories, is the moment that person starts to gain weight back. So what we really help clients do is we teach them that, for the most part, what they do to lose weight is the same thing that they'll continue to do to maintain their weight. So we help them only make changes that we know that they can maintain.
That's hugely important. Okay, I tell my clients you're going to have to learn to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's hard for people to learn to manage those strong emotions that may drive them to eat. Do you guys teach anything, you know, relaxation? How do you help them learn to just kind of bring it down, manage the emotional piece of it? I mean, part of it is done through what they're telling themselves, but is there anything like breathing or relaxation or anything you do?
I agree. You know, to some degree, what successful weight loss and successful weight maintenance is about is tolerating discomfort. It's saying, all right, I really want to eat right now. this cookie that looks really good, but I know I'm not supposed to have any junk food until after dinner, and just tolerating that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So we sometimes do teach clients to, practice relaxation techniques, or again, we'll give them a whole list of possible distraction techniques to try. You know, another thing that we remind them is that if they really want to eat something, and again, they're feeling like that uncomfortable urge to eat it, we remind them that if they give in and eat it, yes, they'll feel better in the moment, but then they'll feel uncomfortable for so much longer later on when they feel guilty about it. So it's kind of like either tolerate this discomfort for 15 minutes right now, or give into it and feel comfortable for 5 minutes and then feel uncomfortable for the next, hour or 2 hours or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So we remind them that if they give in to that discomfort, what they're really doing is they're just delaying when they feel it. They'll still feel it, but it will just be a little later, and then it will last for longer.
This program suggests that people not start their diet until day 15. Can you explain that? I love it.
Right. So what we try and stress to dieters early on is that this is different. This is different from anything they've done before. This will teach them different skills that they've never learned before. And we try and remind them, oftentimes we get clients who come in to see us and they're really excited and they want to start following their diets right away and they're feeling motivated. And we remind them, when has starting to diet right away ever helped you to lose weight and keep it off in the past? If it had, they wouldn't need to see us, obviously. So what we do is, again, we teach them, things like eating sitting down, things like eating slowly and mindfully, things like reading a list of all the reasons they want to lose weight, things like managing hunger and cravings and emotional eating, things like eating according to a schedule. We teach them all these things before they start following a diet, so by the time they're ready to follow a diet, if something stressful happens, they know how to handle it and they don't go off their diet. Or, if their schedule gets really busy, they've already learned how to prioritize following their diet so they don't go off their diet. So we really kind of teach them all the skills they need to successfully follow a diet before we then ask them to follow a diet.
That's awesome. Great idea. You also talk a lot about asking people to write things down in the program. Can you talk about the advantage of actually doing these tasks and being deliberate about them?
Yes. Well, first of all, we do find that if we say something to a client in session, unless we write it down, they're not going to remember. And this is across the board. We live such busy lives. So if we want clients to remember things, and, we find the same for us, we have to write things down. So one of the major things we have clients write down is a list of all the reasons why they want to lose weight. Like their health will be better. They'll have less knee pain. Maybe they'll get off their CPAP machines. They'll reduce the risk for diabetes. They'll be setting a good example for their kids. They'll like what they see when they look in the mirror. They'll be able to have a steady wardrobe and things like this. And we have them read this list every single day so they start remembering exactly why they're doing this. Dieting can be really hard, no joke. We would never say it's not. It gets easier the more they practice it, but especially in the beginning, it can be hard, and we don't want clients to lose sight of why they're doing this. If they don't know why they're doing this, then why shouldn't they give up? We want them to really know in concrete terms at all times, this is hard, but here's exactly why it's worth it to me to do it.
Yeah, I see the motivational piece as huge, because if you can't find something to anchor on with that, you're shot.
Right.
And so, reading those cards is just helping them, every day, like looking at these cards and remembering, why this is important to me.
Right. And we also have them write down on cards, responses to sabotaging thoughts, like someone who has trouble wasting food. So maybe we'll make that person a card that says, if I eat extra food that my body doesn't need, it will get wasted by turning to fat in my body. So in the trash can or in my body, either way, it's wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have them read these cards again every single day too, so they start to get the messages in their mind so that when they're in the moment, they're much more likely to be able to call upon a response because they've been reading it every day.
The other thing I love about the book is that it has so many activity pages to keep you engaged throughout the process. And all throughout, you're asking the question, what are you thinking? To keep a check on dysfunctional thoughts. Can you talk a little bit about all those activities you put in there?
Sure. So there's things like we have someone go through the day and really every hour on the hour rate kind of what they're feeling in their body. Is it something in their stomach? Is it something in their mouth? And then label whether or not it's hunger or not hunger. We have found that clients in general, people are trying to lose weight in general, are not good at being able to tell when they're hungry, when they're not. They tend to label everything as hunger. So we really teach them that hunger is what they feel in their stomach. Anything else that they feel anywhere, like in their throat, in their mouth, when they're thinking about something, is really not hunger. So one day we'll have them go through and really label what they're feeling and where, and then label whether or not it's hunger. We have clients do things like one day, and this is in order to teach them that hunger won't kill them. If it's medically appropriate, we have them skip lunch one day to eat nothing between breakfast and dinner so they can prove to themselves, number one, that hunger comes and goes. It doesn't just get worse and worse and worse and worse until they can't tolerate it. And number two, that the discomfort they feel associated with hunger is not nearly as bad as they're predicting, like compared to giving birth or compared to breaking a bone or compared to a really bad toothache. It doesn't even come close to that. So we have a number of really interactive activities like this that really help clients kind of figure out what's going on with them, figure out what am I feeling, what's my motivation to eat in this moment, and really prove to themselves that they can deal with these things.
Mm-hmm. You guys don't endorse a particular diet with a book, correct? So it's really up to the individual to choose a healthy diet plan.
Right, but healthy is the exact word. Mm-hmm. We endorse a healthy diet plan, and we really insist that it's one that includes the dieter's favorite foods in reasonable portions, because if it doesn't include their favorite foods, guaranteed at some point that dieter is going to eat their favorite food again. And if they don't know how to control themselves, they're going to go overboard. So we find that in order for lifetime maintenance, their diets absolutely have to include right from the get-go their favorite foods.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea, because people, you know, they're not going to want to do it.
Right. Or if they do, whether or not they know it, like if they dieter on the out, kind of going in, she says, all right, you know what, I'm going to cut out all bread because I really have trouble with bread. If a dieter really likes bread, then she knows somewhere in the back of her mind she's going to eat bread again. So if she decides initially to cut out all bread, what it really does is, whether or not she's aware of it, it sets up a short-term mentality because she knows I'm not going to do this forever. So we really want to teach dieters that what they do now is what they can continue to do for a year, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years. So we don't want them to make any changes that they can't maintain, because we're trying to set up kind of a lifetime mentality, not a short-term mentality.
Absolutely. And the more you tell somebody not to do something, the more they're going to want to do it.
True.
Debbie, thank you so much for being with us today. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We could go on and on talking about this awesome
right.
book. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Great. Thank you, Rita. It was
okay.
Great talking to you.
God bless. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the
How
pulse.
How about exercise? How does that feel?
So what this program really is, again, it teaches dieters to do what they need to do, whether or not they feel like it. So how to stick to their diet, whether or not they feel like it. How